Okay, the mechanics of all this. This is the second side of broadcast number 606. It's May Brussel, KAZUFM in Pacific Grove, California. Now, the importance of Vicky Morgan and the way she was killed can't be passed over. I don't intend to, and particularly with the law firm of Mr. Steinberg and Vincent Bugliosi, and it's necessary now to watch the behavior of Ronald Reagan if he's going to bow to them and get meaner, and if he's going to be blackmailed into a policy as if he isn't mean enough. Are they going to push him to the brink to get what they want? Because the Bugliosi story, as I said, involved the Minutemen, the Birch Society, the CIA, just as the SLA did, all the tentacles of the Nazi Party, which I outlined in an article. The SLA is the CIA, and the precursor of that was the Manson family. Now, in the book, Larry Lehman wrote on Nancy and Ronnie. He always refers to them as Nancy and Ronnie. The story of their escapades, their make-believe, he calls it, and a terrible writing style, but some interesting things. On page 373, he tells about when the Reagans came home from the summit conference last year. Now, that was a total disaster. They planned it carefully for every moment the way they wanted it to take place. And then behind their back, Alexander Haig, or apparently behind their back, told Israel to invade Lebanon, which broke that up. Nancy's father, Loyal Davis, was dying. Edwin Meese's son was in a car crash that is the week they got home. They'd known him since he was a kid. He was killed in Washington. And when Nancy arrived back in Washington, this book describes, just towards the end of the book, to Nancy and Ronnie, the Bloomingdales weren't just friends. They were magnificent exemplars of the American system. He heir to the Bloomingdale stores, all the high fashion, and began the credit cards, the wonderful system of letting people know your background and where you are, where you eat, or where you stay through the great credit card system, American Express, which he started. This book says all their friends knew that Alfred and Betsy did not have the closest marriage. As Alfred was dying, Betsy continued going to parties on both coasts. She put him at St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica and was having a dinner party when he croaked. Worse yet, they didn't want the public spectacle to bring embarrassment to all of them. There was a prospect that Vicky Morgan might carry through her promise and write a book detailing all that Alfred and Nancy and Ronnie had said and the group. As I said at the beginning of the program, it was the group. Also, the LA Herald, July the 12th, said everybody was a little nervous about the book Vicky is writing. She kept journals, not religiously, but for a long time. I'd like to know where the manuscript is or if somebody got it. Ms. Pankow said, I killed somebody, but his barter may be not the tapes, but what he got living in that house for 3 weeks with her. He didn't love her. He didn't even like her. But what did he get in that house? That's the question. And, of course, in 1982, there were articles, September 20th, 1982, in the New York Daily News. Betsy Bloomingdale is petrified over what Vicky will put in her book. Vicky claims that Alfred confided secrets of the most important people. And California notables, not only her husband or the Reagans, Nancy and Ronnie, but other California notables. So there was a lot of indication. I have many articles on Vicky working as a confidant, leading a clandestine life. That was July the 11th, 1983. Many articles on the fear of what she was going to do and what she was going to say. And how were they going to handle it? And at the time, this fear was being expressed by everybody. Just at that time, as I say, is when Mr. Pankow started to work for the Music Corporation of America that handles all of their books. Now, there's a news story yesterday naming names in Vicky's tapes. Robert Steinberg says, if the men from the Justice Department don't come forward and say that they did indeed see those, then he's going to expose more about the tapes, who's on the tapes by name. See, he said on Nightline, I will burn them tomorrow. If the president wants them, I will burn them. And then he does, in fact, talk to the White House, and then all of a sudden, no tapes, he says, exist. Now, the Jack Anderson story that he stole them and the Larry Flynn story are all smoke screens. The way they're doing the smoke screen and knocking it to a non-story reminds me of are seeing the Beatle concert, their very last concert at Candlestick Park. And there were people jumping the fence, and there was a possibility their life was in danger because John Lennon said he was reaching more people than Jesus Christ and so forth. So a woman jumps over the fence right in front of the concert facing them, and the policemen run after her. One takes her arm, and then another cop came and took her arm, and another one took her leg, and a fourth one took her leg, and they started swinging her, and it looked like they were going to toss her. They didn't move her out or take her by the arm. And they were swinging her back and forth higher and higher. And everyone at Candlestick Park, just everyone obviously, was watching this. I never saw anything like that. And finally, after they stopped swinging her and took her out, there were no more Beatles and they were gone. They were gone forever as a group, and we were up there that last night. But the diversionary was so fantastic. And so somebody calling Larry Flynt and saying, you can have the tapes, and Flynt offering $1 million. And then saying Jack Anderson has it, all that is a cover-up. Now, the attorney for Marvin Pancoast is doing what the attorneys do for these cases. They're mentally off. His name is Arthur Barrens, B-A-R-E-N-S. He says, I do not think Mr. Pancoast was responsible for his action the night of the homicide. I'm not confident he can participate in his defense. Pancoast was once hospitalized for psychiatric problems in 1979. Now, he was at the same hospital, Mount Sinai Hospital, where Vicki Morgan was at the time, and she was depressed over something, and she was in the hospital. But interestingly enough, the hospital they were at that was named in the newspaper is Mount Sinai Hospital. And I happen to know people close to Mount Sinai, and I had my own experiences with a member of my family at Mount Sinai. If you want to know where they refer people, not always, but a particular doctor there that was taking care of a member of my family, he was going to ship him to Chestnut Lodge in Maryland, which is a military hospital. And if I called that hospital and said, who runs this hospital? How many times has this doctor sent people there? What do you do there? And a book came out called The Journal of Judith Beckstein. She was born in Chicago, graduated from Vassar. She was a journalist. And went to Northwestern University and was a reporter for the Chicago Herald Tribune. And when John Kennedy was murdered, she began to question John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King's murders. And somebody delivered her wine or champagne. I think it was her husband. And her mind went out, and she was literally a prisoner. I don't know where she is now, at Chestnut Lodge Hospital. And she told about the lies, the deceits, the distortions. This is part of her book, The Manipulations, the Deliberately Contrived Planet Smears. And she mentioned a Dr. Samuel V. Thompson, the chief of the Navy Psychiatric Service. That's the guy. And she said Artie Brammer, who shot at George Wallace in Maryland, was programmed at Chestnut Lodge. It was used by the military to program people to be assassins. And if you go to, that doesn't mean if you're at Cedars-Sinai in the psychiatric, you will be an assassin. What I'm saying is that they do send people from there to Chestnut Lodge, and not everyone at Chestnut is an assassin, but they have a military branch that turns them into assassins, because then I did a lot of research for years on Chestnut Lodge, and she wrote in her book that she thought it would be proven that the dreams of Hitler never died in 1945. This is in the introduction, Roman numeral 8. She said this is part of a 20-year neo-fascist international conspiracy that involved the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, Hale Boggs, George Wallace shooting, Adam Clayton Powell, the students at Kent State, Jackson State, the 11 Israeli athletes. You know how those were linked to the CIA later? No one will ever know how many world leaders, Democrats, liberals, Republicans, conservatives, civil rights leaders, poverty leaders, journalists, teachers, religious leaders, and key people in all vocations and walks of life have been murdered because of this system and the people through the institutions like this. And then she said, they murder individually and in group. They have tuberculosis germs. They added live cancer cells. They experiment on guinea pigs. They're aimed at improving and perpetuating the super race. These doctors are experts in the philosophy of medicine, of science, the art and subtleties of psychological germ, conventional warfare. They have the formula necessary to set up one human being to kill another at the right time, place, with the right weapon, whether it's guns or germs or airplanes or radar or psychological deceits. That's what she was saying about Chestnut Lodge. And I do know for a fact that they have shipped people from this particular hospital in Los Angeles to Chestnut Lodge. I know that they were trying to pull that with a member of my family, and I got an attorney up here in Monterey, spent $1,000 to have him run to Los Angeles, investigated it like mad, and found out more than you would ever want to know, but which I share with you from time to time. So she was saying about this institution and the excuse for Marvin Pancos getting off is, well, you know, he was in a mental hospital in 1979. So what? Where was he before? Where was Marvin Pancos all the other years? Write some of those reporters and call them and ask them where he was. Let's have a bio year to year that he ends up at William Morris Agency. That's all we know he did. Now, he was going to a psychiatrist 2 to 5 times a week until up to the time that he clobbered and broke the skull of Vicki Morgan. And she was a very important woman. As a matter of fact, there's another story that was in the newspaper this week, a friend of hers, that she went to Europe, that she was 3 times with a particular king in Europe. She wasn't any ordinary woman. Her house had $70,000 worth of furnishings that she put in her Beverly Hills home. And what happened was that the money was cut off when probably when Reagan was swinging into his campaign, and Nancy and the Bloomingdales knew about this going on back for the past 10 or 12 years, and they had to wipe it or clean it out. And the money dried up, and Betsy Bloomingdale dried it up. Her husband had a cancer, maybe one of those Chestnut Lodge type of cancers. Surely he was healthy. He was put on the CIA committee by Ronald Reagan in 1982, so he wasn't too cancerous then, and he was living with her at the time. One story tells how she went off to Europe and had a particular king. This was in the L.A. Herald, July the 12th. She had affairs with influential men. In addition to Bloomingdale, she had an affair with a foreign king who 3 times flew her to his country. He once came to see her in the USA. It was quite a thing. She lived with a prominent producer in Malibu, and it goes on and on. As I say, traveling with Bernie Kornfield to Rome and Paris and London simultaneously, owning 10% of a business down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where checks were to come into her, knowing royalty, going to the inauguration, and Nancy's there, takes the Bloomingdales to the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Di. Would they slip her into the palace? I'm wondering who the foreign king was. I have an argument or discussion with a friend who says, well, Prince Philip, he's not a king. He's the queen's husband, and somebody who doesn't know better might think he's the king of England. They don't study those things very much, and it may be a figure of speech to hide what was going on. But there was a lot of activity between the royal family and the Reagans in the last year and a half. In fact, Prince Philip was out in Malibu at the Getty Museum. He was in California with Armin Hammer. They were flying back and forth and out here on their yacht, the royal family, and Nancy was back there twice in London and stayed at the castle. And Mr. Fagan was in the Queen's room at the castle. And I wondered what he was doing there. And next week, maybe I'll do a chronology of Vicki Morgan's activities and Alfred Bloomingdale's and what was going on in 1982 around the world, and particularly in London, if you remember my broadcast of that. Now, this isn't the only blackmailing that was going on. There's the detective Robert Hall that I talked about, not for a long time, but many of you don't know the name. Some of you remember the early broadcast. This goes back to 1975. I had just been on the air 4 years. Robert Hall was a detective in Los Angeles, and just here's one type of story. Los Angeles Times, August 28, 1975. Robert Hall was murdered in July, and Chief of Police of Beverly Hills, Captain Jack Eggers, suddenly quit the police department because, according to the LA Times, a surprise twist and tangled affair. Now, Jack Eggers worked with Robert Vesco and Bernie Kornfield and was responsible with Bobby Hall and the others of supplying the drugs that kept Howard Hughes a slave and mentally out of his head at the Beverly Hills Hotel before they pushed him off the brink in Boston in 1966. From 1957 to 66, Jack Eggers was the liaison up to that bungalow, controlling that empire. The LA Times story says Eggers is linked, and he had to get off the force, to the murdered private investigator. Eggers had some unexplained connection with Thomas P. Richardson, the associate of Robert Vesco. And Mr. Richardson had been involved in smuggling guns and prostitutes. Again, women like Vicki had or procured or Pancos procured for the sex parties. Robert Vesco was linked in 1975 to the tape recordings of other private investigators to particular crimes in Hollywood of blackmail, extortion, and gambling, recordings involving political and show business personalities in various criminal activities. Now, I was saying in 1975, if you got the those hundreds of tapes that they took out of Bobby Hall's place that also are in the hands of the police department or been destroyed, you wouldn't have had to have Ronald Reagan for president at all. Robert Vesco is involved in these, and Mr. Richardson and the chief of police of Beverly Hills was involved, and Robert Hall's job, he did tape recordings of very many famous people. He kept in his home when he was murdered this kind of equipment, bugging equipment, wiretapping for private homes and telephones, tranquilizer guns. This is how you seduce people or dogs or animals so they don't bark. Drug-loaded darts. I've talked about the poison darts of the Minutemen a few weeks ago, of the Identity Group and the Miss Reverend Gale and the group that worked down right down to the bones with the Birch Society and the LAPD and Western Ghouls. He had fire and gas canisters. That's one way to murder, is to shoot somebody and then burn them up and make it look like a fire. Chemical formulas. Wouldn't you like to know what those are? And recordings of the political and show business personalities in criminal activities. In these conversations, they talked about extortion, prostitution, narcotic traffic, and gambling. That's the Los Angeles Times, August 28, 1976. Now, this was a couple of years before Vicki Morgan. No, she met Bloomingdale in 1969 and was close to Bernie Kornfeld. Pardon me. She was part of this whole operation and knew these characters involved in Hollywood at that very time. Another story about those same recordings, August 24th, 1976. Hollywood stars drug link probed in a sling. This has to do with sensational disclosures about prominent Hollywood stars with drugs. Involves blackmail, possibly murder for hire. It has to do with 195 cassette tapes containing the seeds of a scandal that will rock Hollywood with criminal charges against very many people, including major stars. The FBI was called into the case because of the links with millionaire Robert Vesco, who for years was the investment overseas. The IOR was a partner with Kornfeld, who travels with Vicki to Rome, Paris, and London, while she simultaneously is with Mr. Alfred Bloomingdale. This also says that Robert Hall was following Salminio on the night the actor was stabbed and murdered. Salminio was about to play the part of Sirhan Sirhan in a movie on the Robert Kennedy assassination that already was written and arranged. Robert Hall was 45 years old. He knew about these various people. He worked for the Howard Hughes Organization. He was shot through the head neatly in the back of the head, died instantly. It was a summer evening and the door was open, and he reached to the refrigerator to get something. He died with this fruit in his mouth. Way back in 1977, I did a broadcast number 292, The Near Murder of Jack Eggers. 2 years later, Jack Eggers went out of his house. The policeman involved on these tapes with blackmail, murder, and so forth, and he almost was killed and gunned down, but he survived. He's living very quietly, and he's survived. Now, regarding the tape cassettes, do they exist or not? Robert K. Steinberg began Monday night on Nightline and Tuesday saying he had 3 videotapes, sex scenes, 6 men, congressmen, appointed officials, going all the way up to the highest in government. He says, I showed them to a friend in the Justice Department who identified the 4 people, and after viewing them, he and the Justice Department employee agreed that the best thing to do with the tapes was to destroy them. He said on television, I will destroy them tomorrow afternoon. The only person I would turn them over would be to a representative of the President of the United States. Now, the next day, as I said, he talks to the White House. He talked to Fred Fielding. Fred Fielding is a roommate, owned property with Richard Allen, and worked with Robert Vesco and Mr. Casey, the whole team in Washington. William Casey and Richard Allen and Robert Vesco and Bernie Kornfeld have worked and had a lot of experiences. That's how they got where they are today, is by trading information and parlaying a lot of military coups and a lot of blackmail and so forth that would be on these tapes. So he talks to the White House, and then all of a sudden he says, oh, my gym bag is gone. Isn't that a shame? Now, the White House can't be accused of destroying evidence. They wouldn't do that, would you? I would if they had them of me. I'd say burn them and say that Jack Anderson took them. That's a good one. And then the next day somebody calls Larry Flint, and he says, Larry Flint has them. No, he was going to sell them for $1 million. No, Larry, you can't have them. That fell through. Now, I think Larry would love to have a picture of those tapes, because Larry Flint was publishing. He bought the LA Free Press and published one whole issue on the murder of John Kennedy involving the CIA and top officials. And he was working with Mark Lane and Dick Gregory. And right after that issue came out, he was shot and paralyzed down in Georgia. And he's been harassed and survived that case like George Wallace, but has lived in pain ever since. So I don't think that he would mind you having those tapes or seeing those tapes. I think he would very much like to share those and get his vengeance. It would be logical. But they teased him, like, would you like to have the tapes of, you know, the people who shot you, because they're all involved in the past? And he says, would I ever? I'll give you a million. And I say, oh, no. You know, I'll meet you at 11:30. And he's sitting there drooling, sort of drooling the way Alfred Bloomingdale did as Vicky whipped him, and all worked up. Everyone gets their rockers in a different way. But he never got them. He never got his vengeance. Vengeance is sweet, but he didn't want them. He should have known that if there was a police charge for them being stolen, that he couldn't print them anyway, so he made a fool of himself by getting involved. And he should have said, give them to the president. That's one nice thing Larry Flint could have done in his life, but I don't think he's done too many. Now, there's concern in Hollywood. There's concern in Washington. The question is, who will parlay these experiences? There were other tapes. There were voice recordings. These didn't just fade. Remember the Hitler diary hoax? The minute that diary began to surface with Mr. Monkey, the head of the Order of the Death Head, with Walter Rauf, with Martin Bormann, with the Bormann Brotherhood, with the top Mr. Carl Wolf and the network of the Odessa. And the purpose of surfacing the diary at the time was to get Mr. Hess out of prison, you know, survivor at Spandau, to get him out before he dies, if it is, in fact, Hess. Maybe they've passed the rumors it wasn't Hess, so they let the poor dog go. But the purpose of the network of the top Nazis, of Adolf Hitler's entourage, was to blackmail and surface to show their power and bring out those diaries. And remember, the German government said, oh, we can't leave any stone unturned. You know how many stones are unturned? It's just horrendous. The diary hoax, who paid, who went to jail, who forged, who surfaced, why did they do it? Where are the Bobby Hall tapes? Where did they go? Even Lee Harvey Oswald's diary that he didn't write. How come there never was an original copy that anybody ever saw? And what happened to the files that were on the decapitated body of Jane Mansfield and Mr. Brody? Can you imagine the law office of Vincent Bugliosi and this law attorney sitting there with the things that they know, these various law offices of Joseph Ball and Vincent Bugliosi, and laughing at us, Mr. Steinberg, but yet closing in, like I said, a year ago tonight, pieces of their activity close in on them, and once in a while you get a peek at them, and you get a better view of what's going on. Now, I did promise to go into Johnny Carson and his mob connections and his links to John DeLorean, and again, Joseph Ball representing him, and going back to the original Manson case. There were several incidents or things that came to my attention when Vicky Morgan first surfaced last September. John DeLorean, when he was arrested, was with a William Morgan. There's a lot of Morgans, I know. But Mr. Hetrick, who was involved with heroin and cocaine, was one of the biggest dealers and had done four tours in Vietnam, worked with the Nguyen Bank and the dope connections. And Hetrick kept his yacht, he had two yachts, down in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And DeLorean was known all around Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Now, the interesting thing is that the pizza parlor that checks the 10% interest in the business that was coming to Vicky Morgan, and she wasn't destitute, and the suit was pending, and it was legitimate, was from the same area of Fort Lauderdale. Now, I know Fort Lauderdale is a fairly big place. I've never been there. But the airline for delivering the heroin and cocaine was called Morgan. Morgan Airlines was the name of the delivery place. And the very best friends, besides the Bloomingdales, Janet DeCordova, her husband's a producer of the Johnny Carson show. Johnny Carson is tied into these offshore bankings and the cocaine connections, which I'll do next week. It was called the Morgan Airline. And Vicky had been with Alfred Bloomingdale 12 years and living also at the same time and traveling with Bernie Kornfield. You're not far from the heroin and the cocaine and the blackmailing and the women that were on the Bobby Hall tape. They're all part of the same ball of wax. So down in Fort Lauderdale is where Mr. Hetrick, one of the world's largest drug dealers, kept his yachts. DeLorean was down there. Vicki Morgan kept her office, as I say, partner in the pizza place. The airline was called Morgan. Maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe William Morgan isn't even related at all. Now, when Vicki was living with Alfred Bloomingdale and traveling with him for a long time and was a partner of this investment firm, I mentioned last week it was in Fort Lauderdale. The partners have not been identified. The two men refused to be identified. And until we have certain questions answered, which we may never have, like was Mr. Pancoast in Sharon Tate's house after the people were murdered? Was Tex Watson at Mr. Steinberg's law office? Where are the tapes that were with Mr. Brody on his arm? Where did they go? Where are the tapes of Bobby Hall? Who are the partners of Vicki Morgan down in Fort Lauderdale? These are questions that I ask now, and they'll surface eventually. You'll hear the answer in a few years. I'm a very patient person, in case you didn't know that, and the answers will come. Now, Vicki Morgan was living with Bloomingdale in 1971. She started in 69, but at the height of Watergate. In 1971, she first met him in 69. In 79 was the height of Watergate when William Casey was tied up with Robert Vesco, and Vesco allegedly offered Casey several hundred thousand for to get off. He was wanted on criminal charges, and he wanted to get off of these charges, and he wanted the president and the Security Exchange Commission to clear him. And there was a payment of a campaign money to Richard Nixon of $200,000. And Mr. Casey was the Security Exchange Commission person. And Vesco was tied in with Maurice Stans and John Mitchell and Bernie Cornfield just at the time of Watergate when Vicki Morgan was living with Alfred Bloomingdale and had been just taken on. As I say, Janet DeCordova, C-O-R-D-O-V-A, a close friend, her husband, producer of Johnny Carson. She and Nancy and Betsy are the closest of friends, and there's this close contact between them, and I hope I will get into the Johnny Carson, John DeLorean, heroin cocaine case next week. There's a lot of unanswered questions. There always will be, and I will always ask them. And interesting, I got 1 minute. I just want to explain that after the Sharon Tate murders, and I've mentioned this before, but some new listeners may not know it, the Manson family members left the house, and the police didn't come for a while, and each person testified privately and individually where they left the bodies that were murdered, and every one of them had been moved, and they had put ropes around their neck to make it look like the occult, and they never identified who moved the bodies. And I didn't catch the news spot about Pancoast, but the way he brutally murdered Vicki Morgan and walked in and said, "I killed somebody," and didn't even give her a name, is like the testimony of Sue Atkins saying, "Sharon Tate is a mannequin. She's not even a person." Well, the time is up now. It's just about 30, 20 seconds till the end of this hour. And in the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.